You're listening to KVC Arts. I'm Rick Dulock. The older I get, the faster time seems to move. Well, Memorial Day is upon us, so summer is here. And what better way to start the summer than to enjoy a June weekend watching hot air balloons launch in the early morning and enjoying a glass of wine with friends? That's exactly what's in store for you at Lake Skinner beginning June 2nd at the 34th Annual Temecula Valley Balloon and Wine Festival. KVCR's Lillian Vasquez finds out all about the balloons, the wine, and even the music at this year's event out in Temecula. She'll talk with Melody Brunsting in just a few minutes. Also later in the program, an update on Celebration of Music, the new hyper-local public television talent search hosted by none other than pianist and singer Ethan Bortnick. We'll tell you how to submit your video and get in on the fun. Also, because it's Memorial Day, we ask Ron McDonald, a local author, to tell us about his first book, Arlington Anthology, Field of Honor. It's about the landmark National Cemetery in Washington, D.C. Ron speaks with University of Redlands student Michael Pesavento about his book and the inspiration behind it. We'll kick off this evening's show with musician and patriotic music maker Jim Bockert. He plays in the trombone section of the Riverside Concert Band. They'll perform on Monday at a Memorial Day event at the Riverside National Cemetery, where many of our local heroes are buried. KVCR's Lillian Vasquez has the interview.
Jim Bockert is the president of the board of the Riverside Concert Band. Thank you for being with us. And first of all, you have a memorial concert coming up on Memorial Day where you'll perform at the Riverside National Cemetery. But before we talk about that, tell me about the band and how you guys came together.
Well, thank you for having me. Odd question, how did we come together? This band has an incredible history. We call ourselves the best kept secret in the city of Riverside. It never started out that way. It was actually formed by veterans.
Oh.
And it gave its first concert July 4th, 1876. And we've been through several configurations since then, but we've been able to trace the history all the way back. For instance, we know who the director was in the 1870s. That was a gentleman by the name of John McCrary. And we've been making history all through. The Press Enterprise reported in 1905 that two of the band members had their horses stolen during a rehearsal. So we have quite a legacy that we build on. We draw from all around the area. We range in age from middle school students that we mentor. They come in either through their band director or friends who are in the band. We'll provide lessons, usually not free, but we do provide lessons for those young musicians. And then we have a variety of talents. There are a few people who may have played in high school, and 30 years later, they were cleaning out their closet, found their instrument, and decided they'd like to start again. So they were looking for a place to play, and they found us. We also have current music teachers with their master's in music education or a master's in music performance, and a couple of professional-level musicians. So we have a broad range of talent, but the thing that holds us all together is our love of music.
What's amazing to me is that you are the best-kept secret, yet you trace your roots back to 1876. That is incredible. So obviously it's taken some different turns over the years and different transformation. What is the band like now? Is it serving the community? What is the band's focus?
Our focus is providing music and having fun. We don't get paid, so we just do it because we enjoy giving back to the community. And I have yet to meet a musician that hates playing. all of our venues, we do not charge admission. We do take donations from the host, but most of our performances, we do like the upcoming one, Memorial Day. That one is very special. It's at Riverside National Cemetery. We do Memorial Day there as part of their ceremony. We provide a half hour of patriotic music. Last year, we surprised everybody. Our music director found an arrangement of songs that was composed by Benjamin Franklin, which surprised everybody that he was not only an inventor and a politician, but he was a musician as well. So we provided that along with the usual John Philip Sousa marches. God Bless America is one that we usually do. We just do a half hour of the patriotic music. We provide the Star Spangled Banner for this ceremony. If you've never been there, I invite everybody, come to the ceremony. It will impress you. And when you go on Memorial Day weekend and you see all those flags, it gives you an idea of what America is really about and why this band gives back to the veterans. We do the Armed Forces Salute, where we have all five of the service songs, and it's inspirational to see people who may have served, but they've been out for 50, 60 years, and yet when their service song is played, they stand in pride.
Absolutely.
Of having served. And we have several veterans in the band, and we just enjoy giving back to the veteran community. And we always close every ceremony with the greatest march, the National March, Stars and Stripes Forever.
Wow.
So we open the program and we close the program. If anyone is interested in coming, they claim it starts at 11 a.m. My advice is be there very early. Parking is not that difficult, but it's a little bit of ways. They provide shuttles for those who are having difficulty, but it's a bit of a walk. And if you're not inside the cemetery by 9:30, you're going to have a wait. So a lot goes on. We have flyovers there, several speeches. Of course, the entrance of the colors by the armed forces. So the band does Veterans Day, Memorial Day. We kicked off a new program in the city of Riverside. It's at the Veterans Memorial Park. Very impressive location. They put hundreds of flags in the park, and every local resident who has paid the ultimate sacrifice has his or her name tag on one of the flags.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually go find a friend, a buddy, relative, and the flag that is there in honor of them. We did about 45 minutes, and it was all patriotic. Again, Sousa marches and a variety of other tunes. God Bless America, This Is My Country, and that sort of thing. In addition to these, we trace our roots back, of course, to July 4th, 1876, so we tend to do a lot of patriotic stuff. But we also do shows for a general audience. We've been every place from the Redlands Bowl. Frequently, we will play for the opening of the Christmas season at Riverside Plaza. We do at least one night a Christmas concert at the Mission Inn area for the Festival of Lights.
How big is your organization? How many members are there or volunteers?
Right now, we have 60 on the roster, but because we're all volunteer, that means most people have outside commitments. We usually have around 45 for any given show.
Wow. And do you come together and practice, or do you just know your music and do you have rehearsals?
Yeah, I'm trying to convince everybody, practice is what you do at home on a regular basis.
Okay.
Rehearsal is when we come together to make the music fit with each other. We do rehearse. We rehearse every week, Tuesday evenings.
And where do you do that?
Arrangement. It's at the Evergreen Masonic Lodge. We have an arrangement with them. We use their hall for our rehearsals, and in exchange, we do 6 concerts related to the Masonic organization. We may play for a lodge itself or do a public service concert under their suggestion. So it's kind of a nice symbiotic relationship. They enjoy the music and we enjoy having a place to rehearse.
Well, it sounds like you guys kind of get around. You stay a lot, it sounds like, in Riverside, but you do go to other places. You did mention Redlands. Now, are you a band for hire for other things? I know you said you're a nonprofit, but it never hurts to have a donation benefit your nonprofit, right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And we get a little bit afield. There was a music festival in Temecula, and we were down there playing. We do Christmas concerts. For the past 14 years, we've been doing a concert for a church in Colton for Christmas. And when I say we are a nonprofit, that doesn't mean we don't accept donations.
Sure.
We used to pass the hat, and then we had trouble getting the hat back. So what we do is we make a suggest, depending on the length of time you want us, if you can provide a donation of $350 to $500, you've got us for at least an hour. If you throw in food, we'll play longer.
And so you'll decide collectively as the president, or is there a board that decides what kind of music will be played? Is there a conductor that decides what music will be played at which concert?
We have a conductor and music director, one and the same. He sets the playlist for the particular performance, and then we do our best to live up to his expectations. He's got his master's in music. He's got more syllables in his name than I can really pronounce, but I'm going to say it's Mark Zabruski, and he is a music teacher in the Riverside system, so he comes from a good background, and he teaches elementary through high school, so he can handle our group. At last count, we've got music that goes back to the 1880s, so we've got a wide variety that we can pull music from without having to buy new material. And that's primarily where the donations go, is to buy new numbers for us. It's not like the old days where you could buy the music with the score and all the parts for $10. I can remember those days, but they're long gone. Occasionally we'll buy a new piece just to liven things up. We keep on hand a variety of everything, of course the patriotic, but we'll also do selections, like we have an arrangement right now in our playlist of Frank Sinatra tunes.
Nice.
So we try to please everybody, so everyone can have that look in their eye of, oh, I remember those days.
All the good old days, and usually your high school days. My guest is Jim Bockert. He's the president of the board of the Riverside Concert Band. You guys have been around forever and still the best kept secret. Let me ask, if people are listening and maybe they haven't picked up their instrument in a long time, but they're in retirement and this sounds like something cool to do, or they have their weekends free, how does one get involved with your organization?
Best way, we have a website, one word, riversideconcertband.org. And you can look us up there. We have the calendar showing which events are coming up. If it's not something you're familiar with, there's usually a drop-down map that you can download for it. We have the actual address for the rehearsal. And our basic philosophy is, if you find the rehearsal center, you pass the audition.
Oh, that's nice. So you have a variety of talent, I would guess. And you mentioned earlier some of them are professional musicians, and some might be maybe they played in high school, maybe they played a little in college and haven't played in a long time. They went on to be lawyers and police officers or whatever and have come back. And so is your group very diverse?
Extremely. We have everything. You mention it. We have two retired lawyers in the band. We don't have any doctors yet, but most of us seem pretty healthy, so that's not necessary. But we do range in professions from one retired in my section, which is the trombone section. We have a retired railroad worker, a current elementary school music teacher, and a couple of people that are involved in other professions. We really get around. Every section is like that. Everything from people who have been playing for 40, 50 or more years to people who, like you say, they found it in the closet and they want to play. We don't discriminate. We will take anybody that comes in. We expect a minimum of musicianship. You know, you have to know which end of the horn to blow into. And if you need lessons, we can provide lessons. If you want to give lessons, we have people who need lessons. So, like I say, we're just a group that gets together to enjoy music. We also have a swing ensemble that we formed about 3 years ago, trying our very level best to keep the old big band music alive. And we play everything from Benny Goodman, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, up to arrangements of songs from the 60s and 70s. Earth, Wind, and Fire numbers, Chicago. And surprisingly, regardless of what venue we play with the swing ensemble, the favorite song seems to be Play That Funky Music.
Isn't that funny?
So people get into it, and it's nice to see the audience start rocking with the beat.
It's been great speaking with you and learning more about the Riverside Concert Band, who has been around since 1876, in essence. And it's great to know that guys like you are keeping it alive and still entertaining the Inland Empire.
We enjoy it. We really do. It's a humbling experience to play at Riverside National Cemetery and to understand what people have given, and we are there just to give something back, and we feel that way about the whole community. But we enjoy seeing that look in people's eyes, that they're bringing back good memories or they're creating new ones with us. We're quite happy to do it.
Thanks very much, Jim.
If anyone out there comes to Riverside National Cemetery, walk over to the band and say hi.
KVCR's Lillian Vasquez with Jim Bockert, one of 45 or 50 musicians performing with the Riverside Concert Band this Memorial Day at Riverside National Cemetery. They should start playing around 10 a.m. on Monday. Make sure you get there early so you won't miss any of the music. If you're interested in joining the ranks of the Riverside Concert Band, would like to see them play again, or maybe request a performance, you'll find them online at riversideconcertband.org. You're listening to KVC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region and the people and places providing it. I'm Rick Dulock. KVCR Television will soon begin airing a new talent search series with the young PBS star Ethan Bortnick as our host. The show will feature local talent, and the search is already underway. Ethan's father and producer, Gene Bortnick, has details coming up on the program. Also, the 34th annual Temecula Valley Balloon and Wine Festival is almost here. It's happening the first weekend in June. We'll give you lots of information on this three-day event in just a few minutes. First, let's find out about Arlington Anthology, Field of Honor, the new book written and published by Inland Empire author Ron McDonald. Here's University of Redlands student producer Michael Pesavento with the interview.
Ron, you're a photographer, you're a published author, and are you yourself a veteran?
No, I'm not, sir. My dad was, and my uncles were, and I have an uncle buried in Omaha Beach Cemetery.
So the interest in this book was just born out of your own personal interest in the history of our nation.
You know, I wasn't able to serve, and it was my way of giving back and also, you know, my interest in it, and to let other people know what other people have done for this country. I mean, a lot of people don't know those people that are buried in Arlington, what they have done for this country. It's absolutely amazing stories.
I certainly didn't have much insight into Arlington and some of the stories there, so your book really brought to my attention a lot of the more interesting and heroic stories, definitely, that exist in Arlington Cemetery. So had you visited the site or photographed it before you had begun working on the book?
I hadn't, but I had been to Omaha Beach Cemetery and saw my uncle's gravesite there in France. That had a big impact on me.
Could you maybe then just give me an idea of what it was like to research a book like this? Because I know probably a lot of people don't have a huge insight into even where to go to get information on places like Arlington or Omaha Beach.
Well, I got the idea for the book is I remember a long time ago I read a book called Spoon River Anthology. It was by a gentleman called Edgar Masters, and it was a turn-of-the-century book, which was very popular and actually is considered a classic, but it took place in a place called Spoon River in the cemetery, and it was kind of like a Peyton Place. But it was had a very poetic rhyme to it. And I thought, you know, what about Arlington? And it came to my mind, and I started looking into it. And I went to look into the Arlington sites, and then I looked into the Medal of Honor winners on some of those sites. And then I started doing military research in the military archives on some of those people that were there. And that's basically how I started falling into it. And I'm going, wow, this story is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
This story is incredible. And people, didn't know the story. I mean, one of the things that people don't know is that on the property there are buried four Medal of Honor recipients, African-Americans, from the Civil War.
Wow.
a lot of people don't even know that they received the Medal of Honor during the Civil War. There's actually a total of 12 of them, but four are only buried there on the property. And people don't know those kind of things. There's actually 3,000 ex-slaves that are buried on the property, just listed as citizens because they passed away during the epidemic of smallpox and scarlet fever that struck the property. At the time during the Civil War, they had people, ex-slaves that escaped out of Maryland and Virginia, were put up there in cabins, and they had their own gardens, and they taught them trades to assimilate them back into society. And the epidemic hit Washington and Arlington, and they're just buried on the property as listed as citizens. A lot of people don't even know those things. There's just some fascinating, incredible stories of people's courage and perseverance and sacrifice that that they've done for this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. I personally didn't know most of that, actually. So I think this is a great book, especially at a time where a lot of people are becoming more interested in American politics and American history. I had a question for you regarding the size of Arlington, regarding the scale of it. How do you choose at such a massive site and such a, like you said, such a legendary site? Where to begin when you research stories like this?
Well, I didn't realize there were people there from the Revolutionary War. And that's something that I found out that there were. And they had moved them at one point from some sites to Arlington. But Arlington originally started during the Civil War. The first 3,500 were buried actually in the garden, the Rose Garden. The property was originally surveyed by George Washington. And a lot of people don't know it, but he was a good friend to a man named Custis, John Custis, and he passed away of camp fever at Yorktown. And in doing so, Washington adopted his children and married Martha Washington, because mm-hmm. Martha was married to him. When George Washington passed away, he lent the property over to his son. And originally, the property was going to be called Mount Washington, but it was called Arlington after the family name of the Custis Parks family. But it eventually went down to Mary Custis, who was the daughter of John Custis, and she married Robert E. Lee. And the property converted over was taken by the United States government when Lee left and went to Virginia, and eventually was given back to the Custises, and they sold it back to the United States government. Because obviously they couldn't live there anymore. They had all people buried on their property.
Well, I know this book was self-published. I think self-publication is a route a lot of authors are thinking of taking today, especially for books like this that deal with nonfiction events. Could you maybe give me some insight into the process of self-publishing and what that was like to look into a book that requires so much research?
Yeah, I was... In doing the research, it took time. It took me 8 years to write the book. And I basically knew there were people there from all different periods of time. And I just tried to give a smattering of all those different periods of time, you know, Civil War, Revolutionary War, Spanish-American War, Vietnam, Korean, even up to today. And in doing the process of self-publishing, I knew that I wanted to be able to have control of the product in which I was putting out, you know, because a lot of times authors have to sign over their rights, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be able to have control as to where I wanted, you know, people to see it. So I went through Outskirts Press, but there's a lot of other self-publishing companies that you can go through. Amazon has one also, and I. Gave them the manuscript. I had to go redo it and all a couple of times because they have certain formats that they need to have. And they helped me out with the cover. And I had final approval as to the outcome of the book and everything. And then they went to press.
You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm Michael Pezzavento, and today I'm speaking with Ron McDonald, author of Arlington Anthology, Field of Honor. with all of these stories, I know you, some of them there was maybe a little less information available on, and you had to fictionalize some of them. One of the ones I found the most interesting was the story of the unknown soldier, because I think when people think of Arlington Cemetery, a lot of times that's where the mind draws them, to the tombs of the unknown soldiers. So could you maybe tell me what the process was like for coming up with that story? Was there a lot of historical input put into that one, or was that...
There's several unknowns. The first ones that were buried on the property, there's like 1,500 that are buried in the Rose Garden, and those are all unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
And those are from the Civil War, from the Rappahannock to the Wilderness and Bull Run. But the background on the first one from World War One, that story is told through the person who actually ended up picking the guy.
Mm.
And he went to a chapel. It was during the World War One. And he had four caskets in front of him, and he was picked to pick someone. And he, for some reason, he just happened to pick this one, and that was the one that he ended up picking.
Wow.
So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they followed it all the way back to the United States, and he actually used to visit the site every once in a while until he passed. Yeah, you know, some of the stories are just amazing.
No, I certainly agree.
The one that I always thought was pretty incredible. It's actually a Revolutionary War story, and it was about a man named James McCubbin, Brigadier General. And during the Revolutionary War, he was taken prisoner. He was bayoneted and taken prisoner and put upon the Jersey. Jersey was a British prison ship that was put out in the harbor. He was on that ship for 3 years, and they put them in the hold, and a lot of them died from scurvy and just all around disease, but they were fed scraps. They had to defecate in you know, buckets. They never got fresh air in all those 3 years. And then when he was released, what ended up happening is by the time 1812 came rolling around, the British were again causing problems with the shipping. And he supported a guy who was a newspaper man who printed his own newspaper, but his angle was more on the British side, and it infuriated a lot of the population. And what ended up happening is they rioted. James McCubbin tried to stop them and tell them, you know, he had the right to have freedom of speech, and they wouldn't listen. And eventually he was killed during the fracas. And the guy who was the publisher had hot wax poured into his eyes.
Wow.
But this man stood up for freedom. He stood up again in 1912 against their own people for the right to have free speech. You know, I mean, it hit home. I mean, those rights are things that we have to stand up for every day.
Ron McDonald is the author and publisher of Arlington Anthology, Field of Honor. You've given us a couple of stories, a few of them that I think are very representative of a lot of the stories told in here, stories of courage and valor, like you said. But I was wondering, is there one in particular you think listeners would find to be the most representative of all of the stories in Arlington, or are they so diverse that we can't lump them into one category?
Well, there's civilian stories in there, too. The one that's actually the first one in the book. Her name was Vinnie Remy Hoxie, mm-hmm. and she was a 18-year-old prodigy sculptress. And the reason why she's only buried there is because her husband was a major at the time.
Hmm.
But what made her so unique and special is that she was picked by Abraham Lincoln to do his bust. And in doing so, she spent a half an hour every day for 5 months with the men. I can't even comprehend what that would be like. But she sculpted his bust, got to know him. And then when he was assassinated, she was the first woman commissioned by the United States government to do a full-length statue of him. And she was given his coat that he wore that night in the theater. And then she went to Italy, to the Carrara marble pits, where Michelangelo picked out the marble for the Pietà on David, sculpted in Italy, and brought it back to the United States. And today it stands in the Capitol Rotunda for every American citizen, congressman, and senator to see. And they say it's the most lifelike rendition of Lincoln there is. But those are the kind of stories. I mean, they're not just military stories. They're people who have done extraordinary things. We have our astronauts there, congressmen, senators, the highest of generals to the lowest of soldiers, and representing all of our people here in the United States and the things that they've done so incredible for us.
Wow.
So as one story more than another, you know, that can represent all of them, It's really hard. One guy which kind of brought to mind was a gentleman named John Gibbons, General John Gibbons. And what makes John Gibbons so unusual is during the Civil War, he survived Fredericksburg. And I don't know if you know anything about Fredericksburg, but that was pretty much a massacre. And then he was picked to hold off the final assault at Pickett's Charge at Gettysburg.
Wow.
He was then was in the house at Appomattox with the surrender that had Grant and Lee there and watched them sign it. And then after the war, to top it all off, this man was sent to the 7th Cavalry, to Custer's 7th.
Wow.
And he was in charge of the supply wagons, and Custer went ahead of the supply wagons, and he saw the dust as Custer was being wiped out.
Well, these are stories I think everyone, even non-history buffs, would be interested to hear. I appreciate you for sharing them in your book and helping illuminate a portion of American history that maybe a lot of people didn't know about before. Well, Ron, thank you for joining me. For those who are interested, where can we pick up Arlington Anthology Field of Honor?
It's available on Amazon, which you can now get it on Kindle and in the book form.
Great.
And you can also go to Outskirts Press / Arlington Anthology, and you can purchase it there also.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Ron. I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, and you can have a wonderful Memorial Day.
Ron McDonald with KVCR's Michael Pesavento, a student at the University of Redlands. Ron's 378-page book, Arlington Anthology, Field of Honor, is on Outskirts Press and is available on Amazon and Kindle or at outskirtspress.com. This is KVC Arts. I'm Rick Dulock. KVCR-TV will soon be airing a new talent show called A Celebration of Music. The host will be the young singer and pianist Ethan Bortnick. The search is on right now for talented performers in our region. In just a few minutes, we'll tell you how to submit your talent video for consideration, and we'll get details about the new series from producer Gene Bortnick. But first, let's find out about an annual event that you may or may not know about. It happens every year in wine country, this year at Lake Skinner. But there's much more to it than the fruit of the vine, as KVCR's Lillian Vasquez finds out.
My guest is Melody Brunsting. She is the marketing person for the 34th annual Temecula Valley Balloon and Wine Festival, and it's coming to Temecula on June 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. So, Melody, welcome.
Thank you.
So let's
begin. It's a pleasure to be here.
Share a little bit of the history of the festival. How and why did it begin in Temecula?
Well, it started in 1983 as the Rancho California Balloon and Wine Festival, and it was started at that time by the Chamber of Commerce and a couple of volunteers. And the main reason was to promote what was a fledgling wine country. We had 6 wineries. And our hot air balloons, which we had quite a few hot air balloon companies that flew around in the area at the time. And we thought it was a great way to promote the community and get people just to come look at the community. And mostly as an economic stimulator for residents to come our way. At that time, it wasn't a tourist destination. It was more about bringing in new residents.
And now it's very much a very visual event. Share some of the details about the balloons and the many shapes or characters that spectators might enjoy.
Well, we're really excited this year because we have one that is called the Dream Ship, and it is a partnership between the Rite Aid Foundation and Folds of Honor. And these people provide scholarships to relatives, children, as well as spouses of either fallen or severely injured military heroes. With the balloon that they're bringing out, it has 140 drawings from some of the children, some of the recipients of these scholarships. They are on the balloon itself.
Wow.
So that one we're real excited about. We're a big military town down in this area anyway, so we're excited to have that and to honor our heroes. And we're going to be tying that into our balloon glow with a salute to the armed forces. Another one that we've got coming is the Bimbo Bakery balloon, and this one looks like a little bear with a chef's hat on it. So it's a specialty shape. And this year also, one of our major sponsors is premiering their brand new balloon, and that's Pechanga, so it goes with their new logo and their burgundy and gold colors. And that one will be out there and brand new. There's a few others that we have. There's the Reach for the Stars that usually does tethered balloon rides as part of a fundraiser for handicapped disabled children. It's a disabled balloon basket, ADA accessible, meaning that you can open the door and they can wheel their chair into it.
Wow, that's awesome.
So that one's always nice to have. Everything else, we just have all kinds of different balloons that come from all over the country. There's one that's a pirate, looks like the pirate flying in the sky, and a lot of different ones.
And what's the process for ballooners? What are they called? I'm not sure what they would be called. What's the appropriate name for them?
The pilot?
Yeah, are they balloon festival enthusiasts? What's the process for them to be involved in the festival?
Well, if you're just an enthusiast and you want to come out and see balloons and you want to be a part of the festival, one of the best ways to get to know a balloonist and be a part of his team is to come out and volunteer, because we launch between 6 and 6:30 in the morning. We always need people to help with the launch and the chasing of the hot air balloons. And I've had people come out that will volunteer on, say, our media day or a Friday morning, and they'll end up working with the balloonists all weekend long, and then they end up getting jobs and hired to go and be chase crews by the balloonists that are out here. So you get to learn a lot about ballooning that way. If you're a photographer, I always tell them your best bet is, one, to try and book a flight, and two, to get here early. Don't think you're going to catch it at 9 o'clock in the morning. Most photographers know the best lights in the early morning anyway. We still have people that like to come out to the festival about 11 saying, where are all the balloons? And by that time, hot air isn't rising, so we have to have the balloons down by that time.
And so they only go up in the morning, early morning, and not later in the evening? It's only a morning spectacular
vision? They only
vision?
Fly in the morning. In the evening, after the sun goes down, we do the evening balloon glow. And that is where the balloons stay tethered to the ground. And they still have their canopies fully inflated. When we play music, they flicker and burn their burners to where it illuminates their canopy and makes it glow against the dark sky. So we do that to music, and we do that to countdowns, and that's a real popular part of our event on Friday and Saturday night.
Since you've been involved with it for so many years, when did the balloons start taking more creative shape? Has that been quite a while now? When did that start?
Oh, they've been around for years that way. As long as I can remember, we've had specialty shapes or specialty designs. The very first balloonist to basically serve as our balloon meister was Walt Darin, and he had the circus hot air balloon, which was clown-colored, clown-shaped face. So he would come out with the circus one. And then for quite a few years, we were always working to get the different specialty-shaped balloons. With those, they take a lot more fuel, which is propane, and they also take a lot more crew, usually, to get them up because they have a lot more air that goes into them.
Are these balloon pilots, are they pilots that go to festivals like New Mexico or across the world?
We have some here locally that have traveled all around the world, have gone to China, gone to Japan. I have several volunteers that over the years have been recruited as crew or photographers, and they get recruited to follow the balloonist around the world. One of our top balloonists, which is a Grape Escape ballooning adventure, and that's Rusty Manning, and he was flying over in Europe last year for a balloon event, which he was around the Swiss Alps in that area, and he was amazed that they fly a lot longer into the day. He was talking about how long they fly out there because it's cooler. They can.
Now, for someone that's never been to the festival, we are talking with Melody Brunsting. She's talking about the 34th annual Temecula Valley Balloon and Wine Festival. And we'll get to the wine in a little bit, but I still want to talk a little bit more about the balloons. If someone has never seen the balloons other than on TV, or perhaps The Wizard of Oz, is that still a good visual in their mind that when they get there, that's something they'll see?
It is, as long as you're there in the morning or later in the evening. If you're coming in midday, you will not see balloons. And we try to make a big point of that, because The Wizard of Oz, The Amazing Oz, and even the Around the World in 80 Days, they show balloons flying in midday. And that's very difficult to do because hot air rises. That's number one. And number two is, as the sun is up, the currents get less predictable and easier to manage, and your winds pick up, and they can't fly in high winds either. So when you see like a balloon in The Wizard of Oz get whooshed away,
that's Hollywood?
Likely, not happen. Yeah, it wouldn't happen very safely.
So
could
it's
happen,
Hollywood.
But it wouldn't be safe, and the wizard wouldn't land in the beautiful Land of Oz.
Well, let's talk about other parts. I mean, obviously the balloons are the big visual as your logo and different things will show over the years. But let's talk about the other part, which is the wine part of the festival. Tell me about that.
Well, we have 17 wineries this year, which is exciting. We have, they come from all over Southern California, but we have quite a few of the regulars from Temecula. A lot of the people or the wineries that represent us have been with us for years. Maurice Curie and Van Rokel, they are coming back again for the festival. We usually see a little bit of a changeover as some of the wineries, they'll get older, more established, and so busy on the weekends that they can't always provide the staffing to get out to the festival. So you'll see a lot of the boutique wineries and the younger, newer wineries that'll be out here. But we have Europa Village, Lorenzi Estate, Van Rokel, Ween Family Cellars, Wilson Creek is coming, Briar Rose, which is a boutique winery that basically by reservation only that you go in and do pourings. They come out to our festival. And then we've got some of the ones that are from the surrounding areas, and they come out from either Fallbrook or San Marcos, Escondido, and in those areas.
The wine tasting takes place where participants can, well, they buy tickets and they get to sample. Is it just like a wine tasting as you would go to one of their wineries?
It's similar. It's a little bit different because what we have two different ways that they can taste. They can basically just buy the wine tasting tickets and go from winery to winery and taste different 1 ounce pours. Those were basically $2 for a 1 ounce pour. You can also buy it by the glass if you find your favorite wine. That's $8 for a glass of wine. But then we have the premium wine tasting, and it's reserve. Our reserve wineries or our winemakers bring in their reserve wines, their favorite wines, their best wines. And these are, they're limited to 1,000 tickets sold. They don't pour a lot. You know, they'll pour, they're limited to that much that they'll pour out there because they basically don't bottle as much. It is a reserved wine. So it's $50 for that. They get 8 tastes of wine, and they get a souvenir glass.
So now you have the balloon, you have the wine. I would imagine the music comes along with the festival as well?
Yes, we've got concerts on two stages. We have concerts on the wine garden stage as well as concerts on our main stage. And the concerts on the wine garden stage usually will start right about 11 o'clock. People performing on there are either up-and-coming stars or indie stars. You know, indie record stars. They pretty much will be performing from 11 o'clock till right around 7:30, 8 o'clock when we get ready for the balloon glow.
And do you know some of your headliners?
Well, one thing we do have on our wine stage on Saturday is Mindy Abair and the Bone Shakers. She is a jazz saxophonist.
Oh,
so
nice.
That is a good headliner. Then on our Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we have them themed. Friday is back to the 80s. We've got the Motels, Dramarama, Bow Wow Wow, and about 7 other bands that are going to be doing that on Friday night. Saturday is our rock and alternative, and we've got Bush, the Gin Blossoms, Tonic, and a band called The Kickback. And then Sunday's our country. It's something that's become very popular with not just our locals but all around because they call it our mini stagecoach. but we have Josh Turner, David Nail, Cassidy Pope, and then Chris Carmack, who is a star in Nashville, the TV show.
Nice. Friday night, it kicks off in early evening, or and then all day Saturday and Sunday, or what are the hours there?
Friday, it kicks off at 3 o'clock. Gates open at 3. The concert will be starting at 6 o'clock on the main stage. Music will start playing right about 3 o'clock. There'll be some DJ music. And then the Friday night and Saturday night at the Balloon Glow, we have a DJ party, an EDM dance party, after party. We call it the Afterglow. And it will go till 10 o'clock. So we basically are open 3 to 10 on Friday. And then we start on Saturday at 6 a.m., because that's when the balloons launch, and we will be done at 10 p.m. And then Sunday is 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
And then I'm guessing years ago, I know KVCR, we used to be one of your vendors and participated for a couple of years. Do you still have vendors from around the community, or do you have, is it just about the wine and the balloon and the music?
Well, we actually have vendors from around the community, and lots of them are either artisan foods, handcrafts, things along those lines. Then we have some exhibits. We'll usually have a few outdoor exhibit type of displays. I'd call it somewhat typical what you might see at a fair.
Right.
And then there's some other specialty things that are going on, because one of the things we like to do is support our local community and all of our charitable and nonprofit organizations. And so quite a few of those people will be coming out doing different things. Some of them are going to be selling our beverage tickets. Some of them will be working in the parking lot. And then there is one group, the Kiwanis, that are going to be doing Saturday only, a paint your own balloon and wine t-shirt, where we're going to have tie-dye facilities and things for them to paint and decorate a plain t-shirt that has a balloon on it. And then they can go in and create their own design.
Who's the audience for this festival?
Our prime audience is always the 35 to 54-year-old. But those people do have children. They do camp in our campsites. We have over 400 campsites, so those are usually families. And we provide a children's fair, a kids' fair in the area that has different kinds of things for them to do, petting zoo, face painting. There are some rides. Last year we had a zip line, a little mini zip line in the kids' fair. So we have some activities for the kids. What we notice a lot, though, is we'll see families multi-generational. So you'll have the grandparents, the parents, and the kids all enjoying the different levels of music, and that's why we have so many different genres.
So it really is something for everybody in the family to enjoy at the festival.
Yes, it is.
Where is the location? Is it at Lake Skinner?
It is at Lake Skinner. We take over their entire park. It is a multi-species reserve, so there are some restrictions that we have, but it is absolutely gorgeous. It provides one of the best views of the valley. When you're up in the hot air balloon, you see all of the wine country around you, and then you see all the open space that surrounds Lake Skinner, from Lake Skinner to Diamond Valley. Beautiful, beautiful scenery.
Now, are people able to, at this time and date, able to secure to ride a balloon, or has that already happened and it might be too late for that?
We still have rides available. Last year we did sell out, so I do recommend that everybody sign up as quick as possible, and you can do that through our website at tvbwf.com.
Temecula Valley Balloon Wine Festival? Is that the...
Basically, yeah. Okay, that's our acronym.
That makes it pretty easy. Well, it sounds like it'll be a great weekend, whether it's Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. It is the 34th annual Temecula Valley Balloon and Wine Festival. We've been speaking with Melody Brunsting, who is the marketing person to keep us all informed of what's going to happen at this festival. Thank you so much for sharing.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's Melody Brunsting in conversation with our own Lillian Vasquez about the 34th annual Temecula Valley Balloon and Wine Festival taking place at Lake Skinner June 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. Find out more and maybe book a balloon ride at tvbwf.com. That's for Temecula Valley Balloon Wine Festival, tvbwf.com. Or just Google Temecula, and you'll probably find the website. Finally this, Ethan Bortnick will soon be your host for a talent search right here in the Inland Empire. You'll see the series on KVCR-TV in the fall, but the search is happening now online for talent. You can visit celebrationofmusic.org for more information and to submit your talent video. Here's more about the show from Ethan's father and producer, Gene Bortnick.
This will be a talent search in a different way, where we will be able to have children, teens, and young adults from all over your area will be given opportunity to live out sort of their dream to perform live on stage and then also on television. So that is sort of the basics of the show, where we will ask folks to submit their talent, whether it's performing on an instrument or singing or a cappella groups or a full choir or a band or, you know, whatever the music they want to perform, they will be able to perform it on this show.
Ethan Bortnick will host this exciting new talent show, which premieres in the fall and culminates with some participants performing on TV and many more at the Fox Performing Arts Center in Riverside. Visit celebrationofmusic.com for more information and to submit a talent video. Make sure to type in KVCR as your station and provide the information and talent video online. Good luck. Well, that's about it for tonight's episode of KVC Arts. I want to thank Gene Bortnick for the information on the Celebration of Music talent search. Also, Melody Brunsting with the 34th annual Temecula Valley Balloon and Wine Festival, June 2nd through 4th at Lake Skinner. More at tvbwf.com. Thanks also to Mike Pesavento and author Ron McDonald for information on Arlington Anthology, Field of Honor, available now through Amazon and Kindle. And to Jim Bockert with the Riverside Concert Band, online at riversideconcertband.org. They've been entertaining folks all over the Inland Empire for over a century, and will be once again honoring the fallen on Memorial Day at Riverside National Cemetery. Showtime is 10 a.m. Thanks to my friend and colleague Lillian Vasquez for her contributions this week. Sean Longstreet provides our theme music, so thanks to Sean. Also, please continue to keep KVCR host and producer David Fleming in your thoughts. He's recovering nicely, and we expect him back on the air very shortly. And thanks very much to you for listening, and I hope for supporting this listener-funded service. Donate today at kvcrnews.org. Also, like us on Facebook and tell a friend to listen in. I'm Rick Dulock. Have a great night.